Get ready for the greatest roast of all time. The Roast of Tom Brady. A Netflix live event happening May 5th. Hosted by Kevin Hart. The seven-time world champion gets his cleats held to the fire by famous friends and frenemies on an unforgettable night where everything is fair game. Tune in on May 5th at 5 p.m. Pacific time for The Roast of Tom Brady. Live only on Netflix.
Ladies and gentlemen, tonight, the reigning, defending, undisputed Universal Heavyweight Champion!
Wildcat Radio 2.0. Bear down, you beautiful people.
What's up, everybody? This is Wildcat Radio 2.0. I'm Adam Green. He's Brett Barry. And Brett, I have no voice from yelling at the TV for the refs not calling a single foul on Daron Holmes. He should have fouled out 16 times over. I'm just kidding. I don't have a voice because my immune system's garbage. But anyway, Arizona basketball's not. The Wildcats are in the Sweet 16. How about that?
This makes me happy, Adam.
Yeah, does it? I think it makes a lot of our listeners happy. It makes me happy. Of course, it's... maybe happy is in order. I think there's some relief, right? When they beat Long Beach State in round one, it was like there was no first-round monkey on their backs to begin with. But for all the people who just thought every season was going to be like last year now, it's like, okay, that's not the case. They made it to the second round. Then they played Dayton. It's like, oh, they're not going to beat Dayton. That's a bad matchup for them. It's like no one ever thinks about how they got a matchup with Arizona too. You know, it goes both ways. And I think what Arizona showed, especially against Dayton, was that this roster is built in a manner that it makes it not matchup proof, but they can play, especially when Krivas is playing good minutes and KJ Lewis plays good minutes and Jaden Bradley plays outstanding. They can do a lot to match up with whatever they have to. You know, they could go small. They can go without Ballo. They can go without Kylan Boswell having a good game and win in the tournament because they have so much depth, so many good players.
Well, and it's, you know, I think a lot of Arizona fans think they don't have depth in terms of going like 10 guys deep, but they have contributors 1 through 8 for damn sure, right? Mm-hmm. You know, Mo Krivas wasn't the superstar in that game, but he was a big
net positive. Minutes. Gave good
Jaden
minutes.
Jaden Bradley is, you know, Evan Miyakawa has him as the sixth man of the year in the regular season, and he sure has been in the tournament. Mm-hmm. You know, those kind of the fact that Arizona can beat you when they have a guy or multiple guys that don't have a good matchup or don't have their best game. You know, I think I tweeted out like they got like nothing out of Boswell offensively.
Who was their best player against Long Beach State, by the way?
Yeah. And the, you know, I was, you and I were talking, I was defending the officiating up until the last 2 or 3 minutes of the first half. I thought it wasn't too bad. And then it kind of went a different direction. I'm like, okay, this is a little rough. It didn't matter because Arizona overcame it. I think I even texted you like, hey, you got to persevere and overcome, right?
Yeah,
that's
yeah.
What a good team does. And that's what Arizona did. And, you know, we're all kind of white knuckling it as Dayton was making a push and Arizona was struggling with the press a little bit, turning the ball over more than they should. But at the end of the day, they led for, God, almost all of the game.
Well, they had made adjustments, right? Towards the end of the first half when Dayton made their run, Arizona was struggling with their press. They made adjustments. They went small with Keyshawn Johnson at the five, and Ballo sat, which is, like, if you look at, they sat their big senior, Ballo, who's been outstanding for them, right? One of their best players over the last couple months of the season. Went with Keyshawn Johnson, and they not only kept lead, but they extended it again and almost pretty much put the game away. And Ballo doesn't care. He just wants to win, right? Caleb Love was their best player to start the game. And then he was kind of quiet in the second half, made a couple free throws. He just wants to win. He doesn't care if he's the star. Like, Jaden Bradley took over, which was great. Like, and I think that's something, the underrated. And we talked about it for a lot of the season. We thought that's what this team was built to be. Versatile, tough, athletic, right? Can play lockdown defense. And we're starting to see that in the tournament. And not that we didn't see it at times during the regular season. Like, they did go on the road and beat Duke. They did smoke Wisconsin. Right, they beat Alabama. Like, they had some good wins. Michigan State, they beat all these tournament teams. But And, like, Dayton's not the best team on their schedule. I don't know how Dayton would match up in the Pac-12 this past season, if they'd be better than Washington State or where, you know, Oregon. I don't know where they would slot in. But the way Arizona, you know, punched first, took Dayton's counterpunch, and then they didn't blow him out. It wasn't a death run in the second half. It was just methodical, solid, composed basketball with a few turnovers here and there. That's going to happen. And they won the game in a way that last year's team couldn't win like that. The year before probably doesn't win like that. And I'm looking forward to talking to Evan Miyakawa later. We're going to have him on the show and kind of talk about just how deep this Arizona team is. Because from the looks of it, from having watched them all season, especially against Dayton, like you said, but they go eight deep, not just because they have to, because they have eight guys easily who can contribute to a tournament win. Like, that's not something that a lot of teams can say.
Yeah, I mean, Lord knows I loved last year's team, but I think last year's team folds in that second half in that run. And one of the things we talked about all season, one of the guys that the difference makers from last year to this year, and I love Azulis Tubelis, but Keyshaw Johnson isn't going to be put up the offensive numbers that Tubelis was ever going to do. But who was the guy that, you know, that up and under dunk?
Baseline, yeah.
You know, he had another player too that he didn't, again, he didn't put up a huge bunch of numbers in this game even, but when there, he has a way of showing up when the momentum is starting to shift against Arizona.
And weird that a veteran with championship game experience would be able to step up when the team needs him most. That's so strange how that happens.
I know. It's so bizarre, Adam.
Like,
you know, and Caleb Love in the, you know, throwing the first punch, Caleb Love was locked in that first part of that game. You know, it's very encouraging to see that, you know, the guys that are added to this roster are the difference makers, and the guys that came back are growing in their roles and filling in those positions well. And sometimes this might be the Pelle Larsen game against Clemson, right? Maybe it's not. Maybe it's maybe Kylan Boswell plays out of his mind again, right? We don't know, but I think that's the point of what you're talking about, is that Arizona can get it from a lot of guys. That sounded wrong. You're welcome, audience.
I get what you're saying or what you're attempting to say. Sorry, here.
I just broke myself.
And we might have lost some listeners too. But I think that's the beauty of this, right? And it's like when watching this Arizona team in the tournament, like, grant, every season the team is different. Sometimes like, oh, this is different. Like, of course they're different. You know, especially nowadays, there's going to be new rosters, all the changes they had. But just there's something different about this year's team. And those are those things, that flexibility, that line of flexibility, that toughness, that leadership, that veteran presence that they haven't had, which we hoped would show itself this time of year. You know, you hoped that a Caleb Love would play his best basketball. I don't know if he's playing his best basketball, but I think he's playing smart basketball for the most part. Like, the thing I love about Caleb Love out there is, like, even if he's not making, he didn't shoot a bad percentage against Dayton, especially early on, he was their best player. But he commands attention offensively. When he has the ball, and I think I was reading an article in The Athletic, and, like, Jack Murphy's like, yeah, when he passes, when he has, like, five or more assists in a game, they're, like, 18-1 this season or something like that. Some goofy record. And that's not because he's like a selfish player. It's like when that much of attention is on Caleb Love and he uses that, yes, to score, but also to find open teammates, which will be there because he's commanding double teams and all that attention, they're really tough to beat. So when you have a guy like Caleb Love doing that, he doesn't have to score to make an impact on the offensive end. But that Jaden Bradley could come in and break the press and be outstanding, make big shots. Pelle Larsen, some big shots at the end of that Dayton game. They got contributions from everyone. And like that was the hope all season long, was that this was what it would be like in the tournament. It's only two games, and they haven't played anyone great yet, and they're still not set to play anyone great. Clemson, they kind of, seeding-wise, they got a break. They play the sixth seed now with a chance to get to the Elite Eight. But just it seems like the team that we were hoping Arizona would be is starting to manifest itself at the most opportune time.
And let's hope that that continues, Adam.
Right, oh yeah, of course.
No, but it's, you know, it's everything we've talked about for the last couple of weeks, even talking about in the mental lapses, you know, Arizona failed some maturity tests against USC and in the second half against Oregon in the Pac-12 tournament. But those games didn't really matter. You would have liked to have seen them had a little bit more maturity. But they're coming so far in the first two games, I think those were mature wins, right? And you're seeing the pieces fit together. You're seeing the plan come together. You're seeing the experience from way back at, you know, at Duke early in the season, and all that tough, you know, non-conference schedule that we harped on all season, it's coming together, right? And this is the time, this is where you're supposed to start to get the payoff. You know, I don't think Clemson is the game that is the ultimate payoff, but
it's the next chance for it, though.
It's the team in front of you. You better not be looking past them to a matchup with either, what is it, North Carolina or Alabama. But if you go into this game and play your best, you got to feel pretty good as an Arizona team.
Yeah, you talk about the maturity. I think back, like the Long Beach State game, Arizona was up at halftime. And I'll be like, oh, this is just like the Princeton game because it wasn't a blowout. It was 41-35. Arizona's offense had been good enough in that game. I think they had like 32 points or 31 against Princeton in the first half. Like, it was ugly. They were clearly not playing their game. And then the second half, they came out right out of the gate and just blew them out. You know, maturity. They came out of the locker room at halftime. It wasn't like they were messing around or playing with their food the first half, but like they had to settle in, right, play this tournament game. And they weren't stressed. They weren't getting all tight because they were close to the 15th. He's like, no, like they're the better team. Go out there and do it. And they did. Dayton, they got out to that early lead. And I think Tommy Lloyd said, like, they knew they were going to make a run, which, of course, you say that. You never want to tell your team, oh, you're up by 17 games over. Like, you're supposed to say, oh, they're going to come back. Don't you worry. You know, and that's fine. Have the poise. And Dayton never got within a bucket and having the ball. I think they got to, like, 4 or 5 in the second half. Like, that was it. And then Arizona pushed it back. It was like 10, 11, 12. Like, when they needed to make the plays, when they needed to get a stop, when they needed to get a bucket, they got one. They didn't get tense. They didn't start fumbling the ball around. They didn't start making stupid plays. They locked in. Even, like, the second half of Dayton, I think they had, what, how many turnovers in the first half? Like, 11 or 12. And it's like they cut down to, like, 3 in the second half. It was like, yeah, that's too many turnovers. But they flipped that switch. They just, that maturity of, like, okay, we can be better than this, so let's just play better. And they do. I think that comes with that experience. Some of the experience of the players who were here 2 years ago and last season, right? The ones who don't want to go through that again. And some from the veterans who have been in this round before and this round and beyond. Like, that goes a long way. And I really do think it's a credit to Tommy Lloyd. And, you know, that it's not over yet, right? They've won 2 games. 4 gets you to another banner. 6 gets you to everything you've ever wanted. So they're only a third of the way there, if they're even going to get there. But it's clear to see what he was trying to do with this roster, which is basically fix all the wrongs of last year's. If we boil it down, what was last year's team missing? Everything we've talked about in terms of now. The grittiness, the maturity, the toughness, and the versatility.
Wow. It's like somehow shoring up all of your weaknesses and not losing most of your strengths makes your team better.
what a concept.
But, you know, we talked about it all year. We love it's something great when a plan comes together and you see it come into fruition, even though there were bumps along the way.
Yeah.
Even the guys that were on the roster last year, Umar Ballo is playing better than he was 6 weeks ago, 8 weeks ago, right? It's coming together. Now we're really getting into showtime. You know, survive in advance season is upon us, and don't take any game for granted. Go out and beat Clemson, and I'll be a happier person for
my birthday.
You know
what's been nice? That was nice about the first 2 games. Is that the last few minutes of each of the games, it wasn't particularly stressful. Like, I know Dayton was kind of like within 10 the whole time. It's like, but they were never going to make a run. You could tell by the end of that game, like, especially like when Holmes got the flagrant foul or whatever. You're like, okay, they don't have it. And like, he missed those 1-and-1s early on when they might have been able to do something. Of course, Long Beach State wasn't even close. 2 years ago, the first game was a pretty good blow. The second game was the overtime game against TCU. That was stressful.
Oh, super stressful.
Yeah. Like, you know what, the Mathurin banked in 3 to tie it at the end. Like, it's been a pretty, I mean, the team has had to play hard. They've had to make winning plays. I'm not saying, like, they've been able to cakewalk through either of those games. But as fans, people watching, it's like, wasn't required a last-second make or a last-second stop. You know, it didn't come down to the final shot like some of these games, like, that we've seen in the tournament. Like, that's nice.
Yeah, you say it was basically decided in the last couple of minutes, but I'm not going to lie. I had started to type out the victory tweet, and I'm just like, I am not hitting send until it is really over.
Which I think for Arizona fans, like 5 minutes after the clock hits 0. They're like, okay, they're not taking it away, right? It really, okay, now they're done. Good, good.
Yeah, I'm not so used to being stressed out at 11:45 in the morning, Adam.
I will say, I didn't like the early start time because, you know, I go to bed at 8 o'clock as I'm like 12 years old. But no, I didn't love it, but at the same time, like once they won, I'm like, hey, my Saturday's good. I get to watch the rest of the games and just go on with my day in a good mood. Like, I wasn't worried about the game. I wasn't stress building my play. I'm like, oh, game's over. Arizona won. Terrific. Like, that was kind of cool.
Well, and even more than that, now that the game is over, you know, the small, if you, there's a small benefit to Arizona where they were back home on a normal sleep schedule, you know, in plenty of time to like rest, recover, relax, mm-hmm. not, you know, decompress and get ready for the next game. And
they got to be able to watch the game the next day. It was Clemson, yeah. Baylor, the team that they needed to see. But that was the Sunday game. So they got an extra day's head start on recovery and prep.
Yeah. You know, does that mean that they're more likely to win the next game or the game after? Maybe not, but it, I don't think it hurts.
Probably doesn't hurt. So, I mean, we don't know, right? It's like how they, I think Tommy Lloyd said after the seeding, was like, hey, like, we got that rest from not making a run in the Pac-12 tournament. You know, they didn't have to, they weren't playing on Saturday. They got to go home early, recuperate a little bit. It's like, to me, it was more those, like I said last week, hey, they just got out healthy. That's all that mattered to me. But there might be something to not playing those three games in 3 days and having a little bit of extra time just to, you know, like maybe. I mean, if Arizona wins the national championship this year, who are we to argue? Like, of course, never win the Pac-12. I mean, they'll never win the Pac-12 tournament again anyway. But if they make a Final Four and win a title, it's like, yeah, maybe they shouldn't have won it the last couple of years. Maybe that was a problem.
I mean, yeah, do we already count this as a notch in the it's better to not play an extra game in the Pac-12 tournament?
Is it like coincidence is not causation or something like that, right?
Correlation, I mean, correlation is not versus causation.
Yeah, but like something like that. Yeah, we'll never know. But obviously, if Arizona wins the Final Four, no one's going to look back and say, yeah, but they lost in the semifinals in the Pac-12 tournament.
But remember when they lost to a bad USC team, Adam?
Yeah, I mean, sure, a Final Four is great, but you lost at USC in the last game of the regular season. So, right. I mean, asterisks, right? I mean, it doesn't work that way.
Yeah. Also, Adam, can I just point out, I was looking at KenPom and boy, the metrics got it right this year in terms of the Sweet 16, and it's kind of, I think I talked about it last week where everybody was expecting chaos in this, and sure there are some upsets, but you look at the Sweet 16, it's not far off from chalk, man.
No, Arizona has obviously been good in KenPom, and KenPom did a good job. You know who else does a good job with the rankings is Evan Miyakawa from evanmia.com, one of our favorite guests, and we're going to talk to him after this break because, you know, he breaks down the entire tournament and all the teams there and what makes each team tick and what makes each team good. But he can give us a really good look at Arizona and how they got to this point and why we should maybe be optimistic about them going forward. So, Brett, let's take a break. We come back. Evan Miyakawa from evanmia.com.
You ready?
Showtime.
On May 3rd, summer starts with the Fall Guy.
What are you doing later?
Let's drink a spicy margarita.
Make some bad decisions.
Yes.
Audiences are falling in love with the most entertaining film of the year.
Fall Guy.
Fall Guy.
Fall Guy.
That's what the poster said.
See Ryan Gosling and Emily Blunt in the movie critics say exists to make you happy.
Trying to make it out?
Nope.
Because I don't either. It's not what I'm into right now.
What are you into?
Talking.
Yeah.
The Fall Guy. Only in theaters May 3rd. Rated PG-13.
It's only a kick. A jump. A block. It's only a serve. It's only a tackle. A run. It's only for the fans. After all, it's only pressure. You got this. Adidas.
We're back. It's Wildcat Radio 2.0, and we are joined by Evan Miyakawa, evanmia.com, one of our favorite guests that we've ever had. If you've read his stuff, you're smarter for it. Evan, welcome back to Wildcat Radio 2.0 and me as a shell of my normal self.
I'm glad to be back.
We're glad to have you. We've been trying to chase you down for a while because like it's hard because you're kind of a big deal these days, it seems like. I've seen your work quote everywhere, and I like to think that we were your big break when we had you on before. Probably not the case, but you seem to be doing pretty well for yourself. Your numbers are showing to be pretty accurate and really good at foretelling what's going on or what's going to happen.
I think I gained probably half of my audience that I have right after I went on with you guys the first time. So, yeah, thank you for all that.
Well, there we go, right, Brett? Like we're helpful at Wildcat Radio 2.0.
The Wildcat Radio 2.0 bump, as they call it.
They do call it. So, Evan, the Sweet 16 is upon us, and Arizona is playing in it. They won their first two games, and not a terrible surprise for Arizona fans. They were the number 2 seed. They were supposed to win those games. I know going into the tournament, your numbers had them as one of the favorites to make the final. I think was they the fourth best to make the Final Four. So obviously what they've done in winning those two games is not a surprise. And that even Jaden Bradley, I know, is one of your glue guys, that he stepped up in the second round. None of this is a surprise to you, I assume.
No, not really. I think Arizona's draw was pretty good for them overall, especially on the bottom side of their bracket. You know, I wasn't really concerned too much about any of their components. Obviously, if they were, you know, matched up now against Baylor, you know, their path could look a little bit more difficult. But certainly I wasn't super worried about their first two games, you know, as long as they could just kind of be composed themselves and, you know, not beat themselves at their own game.
So, Evan, when you know, we're two games in now. And as Adam said, Arizona had a really favorable projected outcome from your data that's proven right. And you mentioned part of it is the favorable draw. But how much of it is what your metrics tell us about this Arizona team and what allowed you to kind of, or not you, your model to predict this? And how does that portend for the next game and hopefully beyond if you're an Arizona fan?
Well, you know, there's a crop of teams that are still left in the tournament that all coming into the tournament from an analytics perspective, based on the modeling that I do, all looked like title contenders. Arizona was one of these teams. I specifically had a group of nine teams that I was kind of labeling as title contenders. These are the top nine teams. There was kind of some separation between them and the rest of the field. And eight of these nine teams are in the Sweet 16. The only one missing would be Auburn, who lost against Yale in the first round in kind of a just wild, weird game. But the rest of them are all in the Sweet 16 and for the most part have all looked pretty convincing. Right now, there's a clear number one and two at my website in terms of team strength. UConn number one, Purdue number two. There's a gap after that, but Arizona is sitting at three right now. And I just think that shows that, you know, they had a really hot start to the season. I think they kind of got on a lot of people's radars. The middle of the season, you know, playing in a Pac-12 that was underwhelming, maybe got off the radar a little bit. But I think they're heading in the right direction. They look as strong as any team outside of those top two that I mentioned. Certainly their path is doable. They don't have to face UConn or Purdue until the Final Four at the earliest. North Carolina being the one seed in their region, I think is very beatable. I would have them favored in that matchup. Obviously, it would be a very juicy matchup for a number of reasons. But, you know, I think Arizona is the favorite right now to get out of their region.
You know, for a lot of Arizona fans, when that tournament was starting, that might be a surprise, right? It's like, wow, they were not playing necessarily their best basketball, even though I think Brian and I on this show were like, yeah, outside of maybe a couple of games that didn't really matter to them, they've looked pretty good over the last month and a half, 2 months of the season. But your numbers, evanmia.com, had them as one of the best teams pretty much all season long. I know KenPom had them as one of the best teams all season long. Is it like, we're kind of in that vacuum, right? We watch this team every night. We see the good, the bad when they struggle. The numbers, though, all season long have told the story of a very good team that was a contender, right? Like, this is the way it's supposed to be.
Yeah, exactly. I mean, I think in the preseason, I don't necessarily think they were expected to be a top 10 team, but they were still in that top 20 crop. And then, you know, they went on a run to start the year where they had a bunch of really big wins, you know, at Duke, against Michigan State, at home against Wisconsin, who's turned out to be a strong team this year. You know, their first loss didn't come until playing Purdue. They lost a close one against FAU. But really, when you look at their schedule, I know that they've lost a few games, you know, against teams in the Pac-12 that were, you know, pretty disappointing. But by and large, they've taken care of business. And one of their strengths, I think, is that in general, against big teams, against, you know, in some of their bigger spots, they typically show up well. They don't have underwhelming performances under the spotlight and certainly against top-tier competition. And I think that bodes well for them going forward in the tournament.
So, Evan, I'm looking at your website right now, and I, you know, everyone should go to evanmaya.com, obviously. Let's get that. The traffic increased over to you, but not too much to break your site, you know, just enough to keep it within the bounds of what your servers can handle. And the thing that jumps out to me, you know, you said there's the top two teams, UConn and Purdue, and then there's a bit of a gap in Arizona at the top of that next heap. You know, the narrative with Arizona and this team is it's, you know, offense, you know, fast pace, high scoring. You would think that your metrics would say offense is the reason why Arizona's in the top group, and that the delta between UConn and Purdue in your data, from what I'm reading, is not that it's offense. Arizona's actually considerably lower score compared to UConn and Purdue, but it's that they are balanced and on the defensive side. Can you speak to that a little bit? And follow-up question, have these numbers updated to reflect the last couple games where Arizona's defensive effort seems to have been refocused in the tournament?
Yeah, that's correct. Anytime that you're looking at team ratings, player ratings on my website, they're always updated the morning after games. So that is reflecting what they've done in the tournament so far. So yeah, it might come as a surprise to some people that Arizona is outside the top 10 offensively on a per possession basis, according to my data, but top five defensively in the country. And I think part of why that might be a little surprising is, you know, Arizona still, you know, this year is one of the fastest teams in the country in terms of, you know, their pace of play. I have them 10th in the country in sort of the number of possessions you would expect for them to play against an average team, you know, in D1. So because of the fact that they typically play back and forth so fast, scores are going to be higher, but on a per possession basis, they've been more impressive defensively this season than offensively. Obviously, it's pretty balanced, and a lot of attention is going to go to, you know, their offensive firepower there. But defensively, they've not been lacking at all. And when you compare that against a team like Baylor, for example, who they could potentially have matched up in against in the Sweet 16, Baylor has been a firecracker offensively this season, but their defense has been severely lacking, which is, you know, different from what Scott Drew typically has had in some of his teams that have gotten farther in their national contender, their national title team that was, you know, pretty solid defensively and great offensively. But Baylor was ranked outside the top 75 defensively, you know, right now. And so they did not have the balance needed, you know, to take down a team like Clemson. Arizona does have that. They're top 11 in both offense and defense. And I think the only other teams that fall in that right now on the website are UConn and Duke. They're the only teams that are that balanced. I guess Auburn would be in there as well. But yeah, it's very rare for a team, especially with Arizona's style, to be this solid defensively.
Now, before we get to some more questions here, because we want people to go to your website, how do we want to pronounce your website's name so people can find this right?
Yeah, this is a common thing. So it's my full name is Evan Miyakawa, so evanmiya.com. But Evan Maya sounds, you know, nice to people too, so, you know, I'll take it.
Okay.
Well, I was going with the phonetical spelling.
We show prep very, very much on this one.
Obviously.
On Wild Carrier 2.0. Like, you mentioned the defense is the big thing, and, like, I'm looking at your page right now, and it has, like, the MVP rankings, the indispensable players, you know, roster strength, top lineups. Arizona has the number five roster, but there's not a single player, like, in the top 10 or single lineup there. Does that speak to just, like, the balance they have, like, that they don't have? Well, I mean, obviously, they need Caleb Love. They need Keyshawn Johnson, Pelle Larsson. There's guys that need to play well to win, but they're not built where they need a Zach Edey to carry the load, you know, or a Jamal Sheed or, you know, someone like that. Is that kind of why this team is maybe as good as it is, almost quietly?
That's a great point. Yes. When you look at their top eight players in terms of possessions played, my player impact metric called Bayesian performance rating ultimately is looking at what's the value that a player brings to the floor offensively and defensively when they're on their court, whether that's, you know, a high usage role or a low usage role. It's kind of outside of all of that. How is a player impacting team performance when they're on the floor? So when you look at all of Arizona's rotation players, the worst rated player, there's actually several that are kind of in a clump there, but Keyshawn Johnson is ranked the worst out of those eight. KJ Lewis is just a little bit ahead of him on a per possession basis, but Keyshawn Johnson still ranks inside the top 170 in the country in BPR. So all eight players for Arizona are inside the top 170. So that really speaks to their depth. If I look at a team like Purdue, you know, you mentioned a lot of reliance on Zach Edey. Their eighth player is Cam Heidi, and he's outside the top 500. Wow. So Arizona's depth really is a big deal for them because, number one, they don't rely on one player to have a great night every night. And two, no matter who they have in the court, they're going to throw great players at you and are able to get things done kind of regardless of who's in. That's a huge strength for them, for sure.
I don't know if you have the numbers from maybe last season or if you remember that far back, but it doesn't seem like that was the case for Arizona last season. Like, I remember thinking, I think I talked to Brett about it too, after Arizona, the first two games this round, you know, Kellen Boswell was the star in the first game. He's quiet in the second game, and Jaden Bradley comes up huge. And how Arizona mixed and matched, they went small in that game with Ballo sitting quite a bit. And I just didn't think last year's team had that kind of versatility to win different ways with different lineups that this team apparently does. I wonder if that's unique to this year's team and maybe unique to college basketball in general.
It absolutely is. I just pulled it up. Their eighth ranked player last year was Cedric Henderson. He was outside the top 500.
Okay.
The year before that, their eighth ranked player was Justin Kier. He was right inside the top 500. There's a very clear gap between like the top five and the six, seven, and eight on those rosters. That's not the case this year, and that's why you bring in a guy like Keyshawn Johnson. And I really do think a lot of this too has to do with the development of guys like, obviously, Jaden Bradley has been a great piece for them all year. He's stepped into his role off the bench in a very humble way and has just done amazing with that. But guys like KJ Lewis, for example, he's been a huge piece this year, giving them reliable minutes. And, you know, like I said, he's ahead of a starter in Keyshawn Johnson in terms of per possession impact. You know, that speaks to what the coaching staff has been able to get out of guys like him and Crevis, who are giving them valuable minutes off the bench.
So does your data, when it's creating value for a Zach Edey, you know, if I'm hearing all this argument, if Zach Edey got into foul trouble,
well, they'd have to call fouls on him first.
Well, that's what I was going to say.
What a hypothetical, Brett.
Does your data account for the fact that he doesn't get fouls called on him for some reason?
I'm not going into the whole Zach Edey foul discussion here. You know, you mentioned earlier, one of the things I track is most indispensable players. That's specifically what it's looking at, is if you took this guy out of the lineup, how much would their team suffer? Zach Edey's number one in the country in indispensability score.
Yeah,
and that's
good.
Partly because he's the best player and partly because there's such a gap between him and the rest of Purdue's roster. If you took him out, you know, I think I'd looked at this earlier. If Zach Edey suddenly was not available for Purdue tomorrow, that would swing, if I was adjusting for a Zach Edey injury in my matchup previews, where I have an injury report where you can look at, you know, adjustments for injuries, it would move the line for Purdue at least 5 points in kind of any game that they're playing, regardless if Zach Edey was hurt. So, but yeah, in terms of indispensability, he's number one by far. But you're not going to see an Arizona player in the top 50, at least, of that list. And that's not because no one is good on Arizona, but that's because they just don't rely on one player. And I think that's a strength for them this season, to be honest.
Yeah, it feels to me like this is an interesting framing, or reminds me of college football recruiting rankings, where, you know, top 800 or top 1000 is like that kind of point, if I'm hearing you correctly, where you're looking at top 500 or even top 200 when it comes to Arizona's roster. And it's a different way of looking at depth. And I say this as I flipped over to the Clemson roster, and it seems like there's not, you know, Arizona, that, what did we say, Keyshawn Johnson of the top eight was at what, 170 something. Can you talk a little bit about Clemson and what the data tells you about who is the most critical guys here, and how does their roster look in terms of depth there as a comparison?
Yeah, a very different picture. I mean, first of all, their top guys, PJ Hall, not surprising, ranks as their top player. He's kind of surprisingly outside the top 80. He's 85th in the country right now in BPR. But when talking about the depth part of it, you know, looking at their 7 and 8, they're in the 502-751 range for Chauncey Wiggins and Dylan Hunter. So that's a significant difference. And I think maybe another way of kind of capturing this is, one of the tools on my website that I've added recently are these matchup previews, where you can look at any matchup that's upcoming, or a hypothetical matchup if you want to match up Purdue versus Arizona or something. But there's a side-by-side roster comparison there. And basically, as I'm looking at Arizona's top players in BPR versus Clemson's top players, PJ Hall and Jack Clark would fit inside the top eight on this Arizona rotation. All other Clemson players would not. That's how good Arizona's depth is. So basically, you know, Clemson's 3, 4, and 5, their third, fourth, and fifth starters. And from a predicted impact on the game perspective, you know, would be worse than Arizona's top eight. Now, that's not end all be all, but that definitely gives you an indication of the difference between Arizona's roster rotation depth and what Clemson has.
So I imagine you have Arizona beating Clemson.
Yeah, I have them favored by 5.5.
Okay, so assume Arizona beats Clemson, which, yeah, they should. They're better than Clemson. And they match up with North Carolina. I know you have them ahead of North Carolina, too, in your rankings. So by your numbers, Arizona should be going to the Final Four, right?
Yep, I just pulled it up. Arizona would be favored by 2 points in that game.
Oh, geez, I don't know if Arizona fans could handle that. Why would you do that?
Don't. I've been hurt before, Evan. Hey, there's an annual tradition called my birthday where Arizona gets beat in a heartbreaking fashion in the Elite Eight.
Yeah, but Wisconsin's already out, Brett, so we're good there. You don't have to worry about that.
Well, when it comes to one team, they're out.
But so your Final Four, is it, you have Connecticut, Purdue, Arizona, and Who's your fourth?
It would be the winner of Houston Duke. Yeah, I think both of those teams are really strong. And actually, I have Houston favored in that game, but it's only by a point, and that's going to be less than what Vegas has. And again, a huge part of that, to be honest, is that Houston's depth is kind of lacking right now, and that actually showed up in a really weird way in their overtime win against Texas A&M, where they only had four scholarship players on the floor at the end of the game. Houston's obviously, you know, really dominant, but Duke is playing really well. I think they're kind of being slept on more than they should. I expect that to be close to a toss-up, and I would definitely take the winner of that game to be the favorite out of the South region.
All right, so you got Arizona in the Final Four. Who do you have winning the whole thing?
I mean, you can't look past UConn at this point. Most likely result is a UConn versus Purdue championship game. With that being said, in my personal bracket, where I'm not just looking at the, you know, the most likely outcome, but, you know, outcomes that are also maybe different from what other people are picking, I picked Purdue to win the whole thing against Arizona being in the title game. So take that for what it's worth.
I mean, we've seen that play out already this season. Purdue already beat the Cats. You know? But this one wouldn't be in Purdue's backyard. It'd be in Arizona's backyard. So if it comes to it, be a nice, you know, hey, see what happens in the shoes on the other foot type of matchup. I think Arizona fans would take that, right, Brett?
It's symmetrical, Adam.
Yeah, something like that. Don't make me think on my feet. I can barely talk right now.
you sound great, sweetheart.
Oh, God. Well, Evan Miyakawa, evanmia.com, or Evan Maya, for those who want to do this phonetically. I'll appreciate the time, of course. I know you have these numbers like that help us during the tournament, and then like in the offseason, I know you do like the transfer rankings and this the roster and all that stuff, so we'll try to catch up with you again. But such great information. I know you've been all over, so it's like you don't end up in like Seth Davis columns and all those sorts of things unless you're doing good work, which you are absolutely doing great work, and we appreciate you joining us on Wildcat Radio 2.0. Is there anything else you want to plug that, you know, either I did with someone that couldn't understand what I was saying, or you want to plug that I didn't even say at all?
No, I think we pretty much covered it. My website, evanmia.com. Go check it out. I'm on Twitter at evanmia. That's the main social media outlet that I use.
All right. Well, that'll work. Evan Miyakawa, evanmia.com. Love your stuff. And thanks for the time on Wildcat Radio 2.0.
Appreciate it, guys.
All right. That's Evan Miyakawa. Let's get more into Arizona versus Clemson. Help us break down the Clemson Tigers. Arizona's Sweet 16 opponent for Thursday night is Ryan Cantor. We found him from shakingthesouthland.com. He has a YouTube channel, too. It's YouTube at Ryan Cantor underscore Cantor. Talks about Clemson, knows all about Clemson. Ryan, welcome to Wildcat Radio 2.0 ahead of this big game, Arizona versus Clemson.
Yeah, you know, I'm honored that someone wants to hear about Clemson basketball for the first time in forever.
Well, admittedly, it's the first time we've ever considered Clemson on Wildcat Radio 2.0 and probably on Wildcat Radio 1.0. I don't think, like, I mean, I feel like I remember Arizona playing Clemson in basketball in like 2012 or 2010 or something like that in a non-conference. But it's been a while. And obviously, Arizona football and Clemson football haven't been in the same universe up until, I guess, last season, but they didn't play each other. But here we are, Arizona basketball, Clemson, the Sweet 16. A lot of people expected Arizona to be here. Not many people expected Clemson to be here. How did Clemson get to this game?
This is a really senior Clemson team. We'll probably get to this, but a lot of Clemson fans are, let's just say the fan base was very divided on Brad Brownell. He's been here 14 years. He's had the great Sweet 16 run. Besides that, it was a play-in win in his first game against UAB, which most people kind of don't count as a real tournament win, and a 7-10 loss. We were the 7 seed, lost to Rutgers. That's pretty much all we've had to show for it. So this was a big, big payoff here. And I love Brad Brownell as a man. Good dude. I've talked to him a couple of times. Really, really, really want to see him succeed. But, you know, at a certain point, you got to make the postseason and you got to advance, you know. So this is year 14. And I said before the year, I think this is a tournament team. I don't know if they're a team that's a shoe-in. I don't know if they're a team that's going to advance, but they really have no excuse. And you got to make it. And frankly, after 13 prior years, year 14, you really got to advance. That was my mindset coming in. I wasn't super confident, but that's what I thought. And now I love Coach Brownell. The way he's led this team, you know, his first, I don't know, 7-8 years, our teams were really poor offensively, but elite defensively. And I don't mind that as a fan, but, you know, you've got 5-minute droughts, you're going to lose a lot of people. And this year, he brought in a lot of talent. You know, he retained guys like PJ Hall, Chase Hunter. you know, they didn't want to leave. The locker room's got a lot of camaraderie, and he brought in some transfers, most notably, of course, Joe Girard, elite three-point shooter after 4 years at Syracuse. So very senior-laden team, generally played pretty smart, and actually one of the most talented, probably the most talented team he's had over these 14 years.
So, Ryan, talk to me a little bit about how Clemson got here. You know, you talk a bit about the roster construction. What's their season been? What's been their big wins? Obviously, other than March Madness, when guys like us start paying attention, you know, it sounds like they've improved the shooting with Girard on the perimeter. You know, standard solid defensive team. But what is Arizona? How did Clemson get here? And what should Arizona fans expect from this Clemson roster in this game?
Yeah, so Clemson in the non-conference, it's funny because last year Clemson was kind of blah in the non-conference. They played a really weak non-conference. I wouldn't say they're horrible, but they picked up two bad losses, and that's really why they kept him out. It honestly seems like the committee values non-conference, and conference is each like half of the resume, even though there's way more conference games. And so the AD and Brownell did something really great. They said, you know what? You know, scheduling a soft non-con doesn't work. We're going to schedule an insanely hard non-con. And it seems like they forgive the losses. Well, Clemson didn't really have hardly any losses. Their only non-conference loss was on the road at Memphis, who at the time seemed like a really good team. They beat Boise State at home, who turned out to be a tournament team. They beat Alabama in Tuscaloosa. They had Pittsburgh for some reason, like wedged in as an early conference game, beat them too. Beat South Carolina at home, beat TCU. For some reason, it was in Toronto as a neutral site game. Even beat UAB, who's, you know, decent on a super marquee win, but just a really, really elite non-conference performance. I thought this was, you know, you knew they'd fall back to earth, but I was even seeing them early bracketology is a three seed at that point. So suddenly you're pretty excited and buying in. Then, and honestly, we'll certainly talk Chase Hunter, but a lot of the season has kind of turned on Chase Hunter and his play. He started struggled more. He just really started to decline. And they lost to Memphis, and they picked up two easy wins. Then they lost three straight ACC games to open like the main chunk of ACC play. And then they beat Boston College, lost to Georgia Tech, and they kind of went back and forth for a while. They were sitting at 4-6 in the ACC, and it was a last-second loss to Virginia. And I feel like everyone was either like getting off the bandwagon or off it. And I was honestly, they had a game at Chapel Hill next, and that's where the season was going to turn again. And I thought, you know, they were 1-60 all time in Chapel Hill prior to that. They go into Chapel Hill and honestly thoroughly outplay them. They almost blow it, much like the Baylor game, but they win in Chapel Hill for the second time ever. The season turns again, and now they look really, really good. They beat Syracuse. They beat Miami. They win, including that North Carolina game. They won 6 of 7 in that little stretch, and you're like, they're back. But then they flopped at the end of the year. I think they could have got a 4 seed in the ACC tournament, probably could have got a 4 seed in the NCAA tournament, but they lost on the road at Notre Dame. Pretty bad loss. Beat Syracuse, then went and lost at Wake Forest, which is Wake Forest in hindsight should have been a tournament team. That's not that bad. But then they go to Washington, D.C. for this year's ACC tournament and completely laid an egg. They were completely unprepared to play, and they got blown out by 21 to Boston College, by far their worst loss of the year. This is the reason they dropped from a 5 to a 6 seed. I honestly figured they'd be a 7, and I was scared of being an 8. And luckily, they got the 6 seed, and I think they used that as the wake-up call. Coach Brownell said that loss, not only did it give him more time to, you know, practice, but it gave him sort of license to coach really hard. And he did. So obviously we're here now.
You know, it sounds a lot like people look at Arizona, who obviously had more wins during the regular season. They were ranked number one. Not a lot of people jumped off the bandwagon, but they had their struggles in the end of the season. They lost their season finale at USC pretty handily. Then they won a game in the Pac-12 tournament, then got kind of blown out the second half to Oregon. People are like, okay, who's Arizona? Of course, they were a 2 seed winning their 2 games. Not a surprise, but you know, the way you were talking about Clemson, it seems like this is a team that has at times been really good. You have to be pretty dang good to go into Chapel Hill and beat North Carolina, who's the 1 seed in the Western region, who is the likely opponent in the Elite Eight for one of these two teams. But like, you look at the numbers, like KenPom, Clemson is 23rd. We talked to Evan Mia Cowell from evanmia.com, and I think he had Clemson as the second worst team left in the Sweet 16. That's not to say they're a bad team, right? I mean, if you're 23rd in KenPom, that's top 25. That's a good basketball team. But do you see this as, you know, a plucky Clemson team facing big, bad, mighty Arizona? Or is this a Clemson team that's probably underrated by the numbers and by the metrics because when they're right, when they're playing well, they can compete on the level of, say, big, bad, mighty Arizona?
No, you're big, bad, mighty Arizona. That's right.
Yeah. Oh, yeah.
Yeah, that's right. I mean, you guys recruit a bunch of five stars. We bring in, you know, kids and we have to develop them. It's really the exact same thing as football, just in reverse. You know, you guys won 10 games this year, beat a name brand in a bowl game, and you should be very excited about that. You know, we do the same thing and we're not happy, right? And it's just the reverse. We're in the Sweet 16. This season for basketball is a success. If we beat Arizona, it's the greatest season in school history, and beating Arizona would be the best win in Clemson basketball history, period. I think you can argue, and I would argue, that the Baylor win is the best win Clemson basketball has ever had. We've never beat anybody above a three seed. We've beaten three seed a couple times, but it was never like a high major team. One of them was like BYU, for example, who at the time obviously wasn't a high major team. We didn't beat a high major team in the tournament until Auburn in 2016. So it's always, whenever we make a run, it was because we played 1 year, it was like Utah State, BYU, and Lamar. That was our path for our lone Elite Eight team in school history, right? So yeah, I think your favorite KenPom gives you, last I saw, was 70% chance to win. I think that's very reasonable. If you guys play your best, you know, I'm not sure there's a whole lot we can do, but if you play anything below your A game, and we do play our A game, you know, we got a senior laden squad that has an incredible camaraderie, incredible fight and cohesiveness. I mean, you guys got to go out and play your best.
Right. I think that's the thing that's, I mean, every Arizona fans, I can't speak for all them, Brett can't speak for all of them, but we know them pretty well, that every game scares Arizona fans. They're scared about Long Beach State, worried about Dayton, right? It's like Arizona won those games by 25 points, but they played well enough to win. They're only favored right now, as we record on Tuesday the 26th, by 7.5 over Clemson. And maybe for a Sweet 16 game, that's a big margin, right? Because at this point in the season, you're expecting the teams to all be really good, really close together. But it doesn't sound like there's an expectation Arizona's just going to roll Clemson. And from the way it sounds like, when you have a senior-laden team that maybe the Baylor win was the best win in program history, that just gives you another chance to have the next, you know, another best win in program history to keep going. Do you get the sense from watching them, from following the way you do, that they have this, you know, we're playing with house money, you know, not happy to be here, but not, you know, just playing loose, playing free, like, hey, they're going to be on the court with Arizona. Arizona has to beat them, right? Like, it's, they don't just win by showing up. Arizona has to beat Clemson. They have a confidence that they can go out there and beat Arizona.
Yeah. I mean, I can't pretend like I'm in that locker room, but sure. I was really think so. I mean, watching that Baylor game was interesting because they were just so freaky athletic. You could tell the difference. You know, Clemson's got a lot of seniors, a lot of experience, and I think they're very well coached, and that showed throughout most of the game. But towards the end, you know, for us, the first half especially, we were making every shot. We were just playing great, and they really weren't. And then really in the last like 6 minutes, everything was going Baylor's way. They were getting every call. The shots started falling. We couldn't make a three. And you could just see them do plays that were like almost like, that's not great basketball. You're just really great. We didn't do anything wrong. You're just outstanding. And they came all the way back, tied it. And then it was that weird thing in basketball where it doesn't matter if you're down 20, if you don't actually take the lead, if you come back and tie it, it's something mental. When you take a 1 point lead, it's like it breaks the other team. And they never broke us. They actually missed two free throws. They had a chance to tie the game. And then they fouled us, and our worst free throw shooter made two. And then they got fouled again and made two more to really ice it, which was pretty heroic, I thought. So I don't know. I think they're going to go out there with a great attitude. They're not as talented, but again, like, you guys have lost some games you probably shouldn't. You know, we're better than Oregon. We're better than USC. I think we're better than Washington State, Oregon State. So, like, if you play the way you did against those teams, yeah, we'll win. We're better than everyone you lost to except for Purdue. So you're certainly capable of losing to
totally
us.
Totally fair critique.
You know, you also beat Duke. You beat Alabama, who we beat. You know, if you play your best, there's nothing that, you know, you're fifth in KenPom. So if you play your best, there's theoretically four teams that could still beat you, right? And we're not one of them. So a lot of it's kind of under your control.
Yeah, it's funny. I think you're right about the coming back to tie or take the lead. If you ask Arizona fans in the Dayton game, they would probably tell you, or they'd act like Dayton came back and tied the game and almost took the lead, but they never came within
like four or five. Yeah.
Three. And that was with like 8 minutes left or whatever. So it's an interesting thing. And I think you're kind of confirming what Adam and I talk about all the time with this Arizona roster is if they play their best, you know, they're really hard to beat regardless of the opponent. But then the other aspect of this is matchups in March, right? And where are matchups that, you know, certain guys may be able to exploit on one team or the other. I'm curious to know what your take is, because my read, I don't know that much about Clemson, but I'm most intrigued to see, you know, Umar Ballo versus PJ Hall. That seems like the most interesting matchup to me. I'm not sure if PJ Hall's used to dealing with the thickness that is Umar Ballo, but Umar Ballo sometimes struggles with guys, big guys that can shoot outside. How do you kind of see this matchup playing out?
Yeah, well, I mean, Hall's had a pretty terrible tournament. Let me kind of zoom in and then we'll kind of back up. But at the end of the Baylor game, there was kind of there was a huge series of plays and a kind of emotional moment where we're up 2 points. We have the ball. Ian Shefflin, our power forward, who's really good, really underrated, makes an okay entry pass. Kind of it's a tough catch, but it had to be a tough catch. And PJ Hall fumbles it. If he doesn't fumble, he turns around, dunks it. We're up 4, game over. He fumbles it, loses the ball. They get the ball. He reaches for it, fouls the guy. It's his 5th foul. And not only that, they're in the bonus. So they go to the line with a chance to tie the game. He's on the sideline. He's not crying, but you could tell he's really devastated. He probably just blew this game. And then they miss both free throws. And as I mentioned before, we make some free throws down the stretch and win the game. And you could see him tearing up. And it was just honestly really emotional to see like his teammates pick him up and rally around him in that moment. Now, against New Mexico, we had Chase Hunter just play an incredible game. And then Hall and Gerard played pretty bad. Obviously, we had to step it up against Baylor. And then it was, you know, Chase Hunter again playing great. And then Gerard also playing pretty well, but Hall still not really playing great. Now we're going to need all three. And I think that, you know, Hall's went against plenty of good bigs. I mean, we're in the ACC, which I know people have been looking down upon, but I think this tournament proves that that's pretty silly. You know, he's gone against Armando Bacot twice and he's, you know, he's fine, right? He's averaged 18 points a game. And I think one of the best conferences in the country. So I don't think that's a problem. I think the problem is he's just going to get into foul trouble. It feels like every game he has two like normal fouls that are fine. Two that are just very, very foolish. You can't do that. Kind of like bumping a guy going for a loose ball. And then one that's a bad call. Right. And so he doesn't get into a rhythm. And so he doesn't, you know, produce, right? Even if you get 20 minutes, if they're all weird, sporadic, it breaks you up. You're scared to really play. I think that's the key. I'm not worried about his ability. I'm worried about his availability and his and doing it in normal spurts that aren't all broken up where his head's out of the game. So I think that's the bigger key.
So looking at this game then, as we're talking with Ryan Cantor here about Arizona, Clemson, Sweet 16, Clemson wins this game if, like, we know if Arizona plays their best game, few teams are beating them. But let's just assume Arizona plays an okay game, just fine. You know, good enough to win most nights. But, like, what is Clemson, if they're going to win this game, what is going to have to happen?
Yeah, so obviously a lot of it depends on how well you guys play. But let's say you play, like you said, like a solid game, but not so much that there's nothing we could do, right? I think there's three. Well, Clemson's got three. I don't know if I call them stars, but let's just say more or less star players, right? One's Joe Girard. He's a fifth-year senior who transferred in from Syracuse. Guy's an outstanding three-point shooter. And like I said, against New Mexico, he was pretty bad. He was decent last game. When he's lights out, there's not a ton you could do because he shoots from so far that they seem like dumb shots, and he makes them because he's just that good when he's on. So I think that's one path, is that he is just red hot and he makes 6 3-pointers, right? And that's not going to be enough, but that's a big piece of the puzzle. The next piece, and I think this is the most important piece, is Chase Hunter. Honestly, this team, I don't totally understand why. Maybe he's the super athlete that can create his own shots. Kind of a taller combo guard type player. And if he is on like he has been the next two games, then that's when Clemson is one of these, I won't say elite, but at least borderline elite, one of the 16 best teams in the country when he's really on. And sometimes he's really off against Boston College in that aforementioned ACC tournament game against BC and against BC in DC, he was 0-for-10. I mean, he was really bad. He's probably the biggest question mark, because when he's elite, this team's elite. And when he's not, they can be pretty bad. And then, of course, PJ Hall, foul trouble. He's got to do better than he did against Baylor. But if they get all three of those going, then you're going to really have to play your very, very top game. Now, will we get all three? It's probably a little bit better than us, a little bit better or better chance for us than three straight coin flips, but it's something like that.
Yeah, yeah. I mean, of course, like, Arizona has defense, and they're going to know these things. Like, these are the players to stop, right? Don't let Gerard get hot from three. They've done well against the three in the tournament, not all the time during the regular season, but this is why they play the games, right? It's the 2 seed versus the 6 seed. The 2 seed's favored. 2 seed still has to win the game. So with all that we know about Clemson, and with all you know about Clemson, like, Arizona is the more talented team. They are the blue blood, or the closest thing to a blue blood in this game. They're favored to win. What's your prediction for Thursday?
Yeah, I'm not getting my hopes up, and my attitude is, like I said, the goal for me for this team was to make the tournament in advance. They did that, and then they beat a Baylor team that was more talented than them. They had, I think at the time, it was the fifth best offense in the country, according to KenPom. And honestly, we stifled them for most of the game. I don't think we get blown out. That would be a really disappointing way for the special season to end. I'd really like to see PJ Hall, if this is his last game at Clemson, for it to be one where he battles and he fights and he has a good game, because he's a star player, one of the best in school history. And, you know, it would have been just kind of wrong for him to go out the way he would have had we lost to Baylor. So my expectation is a great game. And, you know, I don't know if we can overcome your talent, because Baylor's defense is not as good as Arizona's. Arizona's is a top 10, according to KenPom, in efficiency. So, you know, a lot of it in basketball is like, does your opponent make threes? We lost to Miami earlier this year, and they're not good, obviously, but they just made just every shot. And honestly, you weren't even upset when we lost, because, like, yeah, that's going to happen.
It happens, yeah.
And the first time, you know, we beat UNC on the road. We lost to them at home. We thoroughly outplayed them. And I forgot what the final was. I think we were 1 of 18 for three or something like that. And they were good shots to take by good shooters. And we were unlucky. And they just got lucky to beat us that time. And that's basketball. So I just hope we go out and play a good game. I think, obviously, the odds are worse than 50-50 for us. But, you know, if you give us an opening, I believe we can take it.
Well, that's going to scare our listeners. So
yeah,
thanks.
I mean, you beat all the good teams you play, and so hopefully you don't think we're very good.
Right? Like, that is the wild thing, that the better the opponent, the better Arizona seems to play. But again, this is sports, right? Arizona's been in this position before, and they've lost in the Sweet 16 before. They've been in a position as the favorite in the tournament and lost. So, like, Arizona fans know as good as anyone that, like, your seeding doesn't matter. You have to win the game. And obviously Clemson may not – maybe it's a surprise they're here, but they're here for a reason, and that's because they're capable of winning tournament games, capable of beating good opponents. So I don't mean – obviously, fans can overlook whoever they want, but I don't imagine there's a single Arizona fan who's saying, all right, got my tickets for the Elite Eight. You know, it's like, nope, Thursday first. So Ryan Cantor on Twitter at Ryan_Cantor. That's the same name on YouTube channel. Some great video content about Clemson. There's basketball. There's football stuff. If you watch this game on Thursday, listen to this inside, you're a big Clemson fan now, or just want to see what's going on across the country, he's a great guy to follow and great guy to watch.
Yeah, I appreciate it. If you can come over and subscribe, I'd really appreciate it. We've got some stuff about conference realignment and all that, and the new lawsuit against the ACC. So would really love it if some Arizona fans would check it out.
What fun. Also, can read the stuff on Shaking the Southland. That's how we found the SB Nation site for Clemson. So, Ryan, thanks for joining us on Wildcat Radio 2.0. Let's hope for a fun game Thursday. I know Clemson fans are happy to be there and be seeing them playing in the second weekend of the tournament, but I think we can all tell you, and Arizona fans can tell you, that once you get there, you might as well keep winning. So we don't want you to do that, but, you know, enjoy the game anyway, right?
Yeah, we might as well, right?
Right, right. So that's Ryan Cantor giving us his thoughts on Clemson. We come back, we'll give you our final thoughts on Arizona Sweet 16 matchup against the Tigers. All right, it's Wildcat Radio 2.0. Thanks again to Ryan Cantor for sharing his insight into Clemson, because, Brad, I mean, obviously Clemson is not a program that most of us have watched at all, except for maybe when they were playing Baylor. And if that's the only game you watch at Clemson, like, hey, these guys are pretty good. And then you look at them like, oh, they're a 6 seed. They're not very highly rated. And KenPom, you're like, oh, maybe these guys aren't particularly good. then you look at some of the teams they beat, and they're like, oh, they can be pretty good, right? And that's what it should be in the Sweet 16. You don't get here by beating bad teams. You have to beat some good opponents. But, like, they went to North Carolina and beat North Carolina. That's the one seed in this region. So, like, they're capable, it sounds like.
Yeah, it's funny to always hear these other perspectives because, like, you know, Arizona fans, I think every game nowadays are conditioned to assume that Arizona could lose in March.
I wonder why that would be.
And rightfully so.
Yeah.
And this team in particular has shown the ability to fall short if they don't bring their best. I'm not going to lie. I was more concerned about matching up with Baylor because I thought, as Ryan was talking about, their freak athletes can cause, you know, freak athlete defenders can cause Arizona trouble. And that concerned me from a matchup perspective. But that could quickly become a be careful what you wish for.
Right. And I think that's the worrisome thing here, right? Because this reminds me of the 2017 tournament with the Larry Markkanen year where Arizona played Xavier. And I forget Arizona was a 2 seed that year as well, right? And I think Xavier was the 11th seed in the Sweet 16. And I remember thinking if Arizona beat Xavier, which they should have, they probably would have lost to Gonzaga and the Elite Eight. Okay, that's fine. That was a loaded Gonzaga team. I think did they make the championship that year? I think. But or yes, they lost did. On the final. Yeah, so I mean that was a really damn good Gonzaga team. But it's like they got the bracket worked out. They're in the Elite Eight. They got Xavier. They beat them a couple years earlier in the tournament and they're better. Right? This is the 11th seed. And Arizona was probably better most of the night, but then just fell apart late in the second half where Larry Markkanen just didn't shoot. They lost the game. And not that people say don't get overconfident. Like we're fans, we're media people. What we think and say doesn't have any bearing on the game. You know, the thing is like make sure the team knows that they can be beat by anyone. And that's to like Ryan was saying, if Arizona plays their best game or a good game, there's probably not much Clemson can do because Arizona's best and Arizona's good is probably better than Clemson's best and Clemson's good. But if Arizona doesn't play a great game, and they haven't played a great game in the tournament yet, they played, you know, like we talked about earlier, like they played 2 solid games, but they weren't special. But if Arizona plays an okay game and Clemson plays a top tier game, there's nothing that says the Tigers can't beat the Cats.
Yeah, no, I agree. I think the question is if Clemson plays a excellent game and Arizona plays a good game. If the ball just bounces the right way, if, you know, Gerard's hitting a ton of threes or PJ Hall's hitting a ton of threes,
yeah,
that's the difference in a win versus loss. But also, you know, as much as Hall could be a matchup problem for Ballo, that goes both ways. Mm-hmm. I have a feeling you're going to see a lot of the standard Arizona practice, which is get their big guy in foul trouble early by pounding the ball down low. And if you get him in foul trouble, you know, he's probably their best
facing player. Deron Holmes, the last round probably helped. He wasn't the 3-point shooter that Hall is, but a 5 who likes to stretch the floor.
Yeah. But also if he gets into foul trouble, like we talked with Evan, you know, there's not a lot of depth on this Clemson team. So if you get him in foul trouble, that's where you don't even have to leave Amar Ballo out there to feast if they don't have a good competent big in the back, but you can just outrun their bench with Arizona's depth. Mm-hmm. So you can kind of see I'd be shocked if they don't follow the standard Arizona offensive game plan, which is pound it down low to Ballo early, try to get him in foul trouble. And then it's almost like a power running game in a way with how Arizona beats teams up down
low. Soften them up a little bit. And then, yeah.
And then you reap the benefits in the second half with foul trouble and going into the bonus and the like. Right.
And then, and obviously like Gerard, the guy's a great 3-point shooter. Arizona just played a team that's filled with great 3-point shooters and did an admirable job. Like, you don't have to get beat by the three unless there's other things that prevent you from defending the three-point line. Like, I remember, like, the Sam Decker year, well, they also had Frank Kaminsky and some other players that were doing work down low so they couldn't just camp out at the three-point line. Not that Decker wasn't uncovered. Like, he was covered pretty well for a lot of those. But I think Arizona's defense has shown, especially for the first couple of games, that if they really put it towards, like, taking away the three-point shot, the open three-point look. Now, maybe Gerard hits some with someone in his face. That could happen. But if Arizona's playing the defense that they played the first 2 games in the tournament, Clemson's not scoring much on them. And that's just, can Arizona's offense be okay? Because the defense is capable, I think, of locking Clemson down. You know, if PJ Hall's not as dynamic as Deron Holmes, a better 3-point shooter, but not as dynamic of a player. I think Arizona, between the small ball lineups they ran, or even Ballo and Crivas, who gave them the good minutes against Dayton, I think they can probably limit him And then the guards are, there's not like going to throw wave after wave of great shooter, great player at them. You know, not to say someone can't get hot from three, because it happens. But just matchup-wise, there's more good players in Arizona than there are in Clemson. And if Arizona has the defense, which they do have a good defense, if they can find a way to remove some of these good players, either with foul trouble or just game planning to make it tough on them, then Arizona should win this game.
Yeah, I think that's right. I think it's, you know, what I talked with about last time on the podcast for Arizona. Everybody worries about, you know, Kylan Boswell being confident shooting, blah, blah, you know, Ballo making free throws. I maintain if this team has the defensive intensity they had against Dayton and doesn't have unforced turnovers, like make them make you turn it over rather than the unforced ones, which they're kind of prone to do at times. If Arizona does those two things, they should beat Clemson, even if Clemson plays well. I think that everything else kind of falls into line. Now, of course, there's a scenario where Caleb Love is taking great shots in rhythm and he shoots over 20 and Gerard goes 10 for 10, right? Okay, then they're probably losing that one, but that's unlikely. It's
right. There's more paths for Arizona winning this game. Like, Arizona doesn't have to do anything special to win this game. Clemson probably does, unless Arizona is absolutely dreadful, which, given the amount of good players that Arizona has, it's hard to imagine them being dreadful, right? They might not be the best they can be, but I feel like their floor is a lot higher than a lot of people give them credit for.
Yeah, no, I think that's right. So I'm trying not to get too excited about it, Adam. We're only, you know, we're at the Sweet 16. It feels like it's been a while, and our hearts have been broken before. But
yeah, 2 years ago.
It feels like for damn ever, Adam.
It does. It does. Well, but that's going to be that's the game. It starts at 4:09 Arizona time on Thursday. It's on CBS in Los Angeles. Whew. Arizona wins that game. They get the winner of Alabama and North Carolina. One team Arizona's already beaten this season in Alabama. Another team that Clemson's already beat in North Carolina. So we will see. Oh, but first for Arizona, obviously, got to take care of business. And it is taking care of business when you're the favorite. When if you do what you're supposed to do, you win this game. And like I do think Arizona's going to win the game. I think Arizona has shown enough in terms of their versatility. We talked about earlier the versatility they showed over the first two games. They have the defense that seems to be locked in. And I do think their veteran leadership is making a point to keep these guys focused and like just on task. And I think when Arizona's playing like that with that mentality, they're not losing a game like this one.
I think you're right. Are we doing predictions for this game, Adam? Or are we not?
I think Arizona wins. That's my prediction. I don't want to give you a score. We don't usually do basketball scores.
No, but sometimes it's fun just to be a degenerate.
If you want to give one, by all means.
I'm going to go 83-75 Arizona.
Okay, cool. Oh, I'm not doing one. I'm not giving you a score.
Within the range of reason.
That seems like a reasonable score. I would accept that. Man. It's a Sweet 16 with the expectation of more. That's what's wild. Like how Ryan was saying, like, Clemson people are just happy that they made it this far. I get that. Arizona fans obviously are sad. Like, they're pleased they made it this far. They're relieved they made it this far. The expectation, especially when everyone nationally is like, yep, they should make the Final Four from their region. It's like, ooh, so this isn't nearly good enough. So the pressure is on Arizona, but I think this is a team built to handle that, and they do win this game. Brett, did you know spring football practice starts this week?
I did, actually. I think it started today.
It started today. We're recording on Tuesday. Oh, see, we don't have time to talk football. Loaded basketball. Arizona's in the Sweet 16, their national the tournament, NCAA tournament. So we'll get to football eventually. Don't worry. It's going to happen.
As God intended, we're not talking about football in late March.
And, of course, the women's team end up losing their game. Their first, I guess, they won the play-in game. They lost the second game. Should be an interesting offseason for D.A. Barnes and that team, assuming my voice can make it that long.
You sound great, honey.
Oh God.
No, it was nice to see the Arizona women win the play-in game and put up a real good fight and just kind of ran out of steam in I guess the opening or round of 16.
Yeah, to Syracuse. So they battled. They battled like they did like all season. So nothing to be ashamed of there. Right. Well, I think that's going to do it for this edition of Wildcat Radio 2.0. Of course, you can find us on the Twitter machine at Wildcat Radio AZ. Incidentally enough, that is your promo code for home field. If you're looking to buy some new gear, the first purchase, use promo code Wildcat Radio AZ. Get 15% off your order. They do some really great stuff, very comfortable, and my home field apparel is undefeated so far this tournament.
Likewise. And so, yeah. I also got the new hat arrived this week, Adam.
Nice. So that looks sweet.
To wear this weekend.
That looks real sweet. I remember you can find us on iTunes and Spotify. Subscribe to us on both. Leave us a rating and review. If you leave us a review on iTunes, we will read that review on the air. Brett, we don't have any new ones this week, it sounds like.
We do not.
Can't wait for next week. Could barely understand Adam. But we're looking forward to his bar mitzvah in a couple of weeks.
I'm looking forward to if this is a face made for radio and that's a voice for radio, oh boy.
It's a voice for 13 years old is what it is.
Are you old enough to operate that machinery?
Maybe I'll get some facial hair soon enough. Once again, thanks to Evan Miyakawa, evanmia.com, of course, for his insight, and thanks to Ryan Cantor from Shaking the Southland. Of course, you can find his YouTube channel at Ryan Cantor, at Ryan_Cantor as well. But yeah, thank you to both of them for joining us and giving us some insight into this really big tournament edition, second weekend of the tournament edition of Wildcat Radio 2.0. But yeah, hopefully our next show we're talking about more victories and perhaps Arizona's first Final Four since 2001. But whatever happens over the second weekend of the tournament, we'll talk about next week. And until then, remember to bear down.
Bear down.